The Fan on Demand. You'll know everything before he even puts pen to paper. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We're back, joined by Marty McSorley of Hockey Central in studio. How you doing?
I'm doing good. You know, I get back up here before the trade deadline, and I'm immersed in this for about 8 or 9 days. And, you know, I watch five games a day and really kind of enjoy it and get right up on top of it again.
You know, we really don't make a big enough deal about the trade deadline. I've often thought that we need I think we need an hourly trade deadline special.
You know, Jeff, I think a lot of people in Toronto, they come to take it for granted. But, you know, I come in here from Los Angeles. I get down there. I see a lot of games down there. But this is the center of the hockey world.
Yeah, you get a lot of talk up here.
Even if old Montreal Canadiens, if they go to make some more extra money, they come to Toronto. Old Detroit Red Wings.
That's right.
And it's kind of where everything in the hockey world, as much as the office is in New York, it comes through Toronto.
We've got Marty for a couple of segments. We've got a lot to talk about. The first thing I wanted to talk about, because I know it's something you have some strong opinions about, and I guess it just kind of passed because, you know, there really wasn't a tremendous impact on the Toronto Maple Leafs other than the fact that they're going to be seeing a lot more of the Detroit Red Wings. But the more, Marty, you look at some of the things that have gone into realignment, the more you realize that there were a lot of IOUs that were serviced, shall we say, in the realignment, weren't there?
There is no shock that the realignment was done after the collective bargaining agreement. Gary Bettman wanted to make sure all his owners fell into line for him. He could do whatever he needed to do. He'll use whatever leverage he can to kind of sway whatever he needs from them. And realignment is one that the owners were watching very, very closely. They wanted to be favorable at the table. They wanted to be able to sit down with Gary and have some influence. And obviously, his biggest influence was Jeremy Jacobs, the owner in Boston, who is one of his biggest supporters and one of the guys that holds the line for Gary in rounding up the necessary votes that he needs.
As you saw realignment come down, what stood out to you as far as, was there anything that was a real surprise, anything that was a disappointment?
Well, the real disappointment is that Tampa and Florida have to fly over Washington, over Carolina, and come up to Boston because Jeremy Jacobs has his place down in Florida. He wants to take all his buddies to the games in Tampa and Florida. And, you know, Jeremy Jacobs is probably the most influential owner with Gary Bettman. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so now Tampa and Florida to travel have to come up across the border into Canada for three of the teams, Toronto, Ottawa, and Montreal. And then, you know, they play Boston and Detroit. So it really gave them a ton of unnecessary travel, unnecessary delay when they are traveling. It services the owner of the Boston Bruins, but it doesn't make a lot of sense geographically.
No, and I would think, too, that for a team like, and I don't know, maybe Florida, or Tampa certainly, maybe Tampa likes it because they will get good crowds.
But they'll do the same with New York.
That's what I was going to say. It's like you've sacrificed Florida, a weak market, and you're trying to sell that team. And Tampa, a market that's taken strides, but a market that clearly still needs to be managed. And it's almost like you've taken those two markets and thrown them to the wolves.
Well, the only thing is, when I see the 16 and 14, you know, 16 teams in the East, I have to think there's something else that's lying underneath. Is Florida going to move? Is there something? Is there Portland? Is there somebody that's going to get a franchise from the East to balance that out? And that could very likely happen.
With Marty McSorley on the Jeff Blair Show, you talked about the trade deadline. We are getting close to it. It seems to me maybe this year more so than any other year because of the compressed schedule, Marty, that the job status of the general manager is going to have an even bigger role to play in what decisions are made, isn't it?
Well, the revenues, because they did not take any games off the playoffs. There is so much revenue generated when a team goes deep into the playoffs. And So now what you're looking at is general managers are feeling the pressures. The owners watch it a lot closer than they used to. There's, you know, with these all these new buildings and all these new ways to generate revenues come playoff time. You know, a guy like Doug Wilson in San Jose, he's under an awful lot of pressure for that team to go deep. You know, Glenn Sather in New York. I mean, New York never sits still. If they don't make the playoffs, there's going to be huge rumblings in New York. I'm not saying Glenn's job's going to be on the line, but I have to think that the coach will be gone. You know, so they need to do something. And the New York media expects a splash. So Glenn is going to be under some pressure to do some things. Philadelphia never sits still. When you see Philadelphia and New York sitting under the number eight spot, they are not going to sit still and watch. They're going to be active. They're going to try to make their team better.
Do you think that the Rangers have tuned out John Tortorella?
I think that more than anything, I think that they when some of his actions towards the media and people after the games and comments that he makes, it's wore out. People are tired of hearing about it. You know, when he was yelling at Peter DeBoer last year, and he kind of made comments to Sam Rosen that I think really affected a lot of people. They really felt that was way over the line, and I think it's got to the point now that none of that is endearing for anybody in New York anymore. So I think he's really got to be careful with that.
You know, when you talk about the Rangers, Rick Nash, he's been a good acquisition for the team. What he's got, 9 goals, 23 points, 23 games. But I look at some of the moves that had to be made to make room for him. I'm not saying if you're in hindsight. I know hindsight is not always a valid thing. But do you think the Rangers are having any second thoughts right now about maybe having to do too much to accommodate Rick Nash?
No, you know, because I don't think he was his personality was a tough fit. You know, some guys come in and they think they're larger in life. They take up too much space in the locker room. You know, they demand so much and everything has to go through them and they really change everything. What happened in New York last year is they got into the playoffs, and going in there, my question to them was, are they going to make changes at the deadline? And they said, we are playing over our heads right now. Mm-hmm. They felt that they were overachieving last year. They didn't make trades because their chemistry was so good. But that's only going to take them so long. You go out and you get a Rick Nash, you do it. You go and get that star, especially in New York, where they have to sell stars to compete with the Yankees and the Knicks and everybody else. Rick Nash was a good fit for them. He's a really, really talented player, which when you get that opportunity, that's going to play long-term for your organization. It's just, do you have enough depth around him to help him once he gets there? And so the trade may have taken some of the depth away to put a little bit more pressure on Rick Nash to perform.
Well, and what I wonder, too, is I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but we do hear less about Marian Gaborik. We do hear less about Brad Richards. And I don't think it's all Rick Nash. But do you think maybe, Marty, the Rangers underestimated how much other guys were going to have to get used to playing with Nash? You know, Nash is, as you say, he's a good clubhouse guy and or dressing room guy, and he fits in well. But do you think maybe the Rangers underestimated the way other players would have to try to fit in alongside him?
Well, I think in New York that the changes happen so fast there that, you know, you go out and you get the best player available and you know, you get the stars when you can get the stars. And now all of a sudden, if your other guys aren't performing, they're gone. It's, mm-hmm. New York is that market. It is such, you know, what did you do for me yesterday type of thing. It's now, in the now. And so if Marian Gaborik isn't performing, they'll make a move. That's just how it goes. And you know, I remember, asking Glenn Sather about, you know, when he signed, different guys, Bobby Holik and different guys, huge contracts before the cap. He said, this is New York. You have to make a splash. You have to make moves. You have to try to win now. That's what that market demands. And so those guys are underperforming, but I don't think you can really be too sensitive to where they're at.
And one of the other things, too, if you watch the Rangers, we're joined by Marty McSorley and the Jeff Blair Show, but one of the things when you watch the Rangers, I know that John Tortorella always sort of talked about blocking shots and all this. I get the sense that this team sometimes plays it too safe, and that's not what John Tortorella used to talk about in Tampa all the time. He didn't want his team to play safe. Do the Rangers need to be a little more aggressive in the forecheck?
Well, I mean, when you've got Rick Nash and Marian Gaborik, is a tremendous goal scorer. Mm-hmm. And Richards is a very good hockey player. So, but when you look back at Tampa, Tortorella was the first guy that got Vinny LeCavalier to play some defense.
Yes.
He really, really hammered on him. For those guys to win down there, he hammered on them about responsibility with the team, short shifts, you know, making sure you're good in your own zone. You don't leave without the puck, all of those things. So I think it is kind of his MO in Tampa. Mind you, he had a ton of talented players down there that could finish the job in the other end.
I think he had more depth down there, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely, than the Rangers do. Absolutely. And, you know, when you want to run and gun, you know, can you do it with one line and not with the other three? Because maybe that's where the Rangers are. And part of it is because of the trade for Rick Nash. They've got one line that they can put on the ice that they feel confident with. The rest of the lines, I don't think you want to play that way.
Yeah, the Rangers have, of their final 21 games, 12 are against the teams ahead of them, the top eight teams in the East. With we're joined by Marty McSorley and the Jeff Blair Show. Got a lot I want to get to. I want to talk about stuff going on in Buffalo. I want to talk about the Penguins streak, obviously, and the Leafs. But before we do that, I also wanted to focus a little bit on the other team that's been underachieving in the East, the Philadelphia Flyers. A lot of reports that Peter Laviolette's under pressure there. That's another team that just, Marty, it almost seems as if they weren't ready when the season started again. Or is it? Is this, maybe it's a, maybe not having Chris Pronger, and maybe that really, that it's makes it, you know, explains it.
That is a huge hole when he take out, because he last year when the season started, those young kids started on fire. And those young kids are really good. I mean, really, really good. The kid Simmons came in from L.A. with something to prove last year, and he's been really, really good for him. Braden Schenn, maybe not quite as good as they were hoping that he would turn to. They've got a really, really good crew of young players. You look down their lineup at the guys that are under 24 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
That should be a very, very good team. I'm not sure if their defense has played up to where they are. And the guy in net, his numbers are good, but what a wild card. You know, from a team continuity standpoint.
Doesn't inspire confidence.
No. Well, and what you do is you just separate the goaltending position from the rest of the guys. They just ignore him. Let him do his job, and we'll do ours. And I don't know if that's really, really healthy. But Philadelphia will continue to make moves. I really, really like their young guys. So even if they do underperform this year, I really hope they don't start tearing into that group of young guys, because, you know, Claude Drew is such a talented player, and you go through that lineup, I really like them long term.
Do they have to make an addition at the deadline, you know, looking ahead to the future, not just this year, but looking ahead to the future? Do they have to add that stud defenseman? I don't know if the guy's out there, but do they have to do that, or is that something they have to wait until the offseason to address?
I think that they will try to do it. You know, the price gets so high, and who is the guy that's out there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, maybe it's trying to make an offer to the Ottawa Senators for Sergei Gonchar for a short fix until they can kind of, you know, go after a Shea Weber or
right.
somebody like that long term. I don't know. The price tag is so high, and you know, they're going to be asking for those young kids off the roster. That's what everybody wants, and they need it. Whether they'll be able to do it, they're going to try. We know that much.
Patrick Kaleta and Ryan Miller, I wouldn't say they got into it, but Patrick Kaleta yesterday made some comments about not being happy that he was scratched. Ryan Miller essentially told him to grow up. Ryan Miller had a lot to say after yesterday's game. He's had more and more to say. We're going to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins streak, the Leafs, and the Buffalo Sabres as well. Got Marty McSorley for one more segment. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Agree with everything he says, and you'll get along fine. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We are back in the Jeff Blair Show. Marty McSorley joins us. Hockey Central at noon is just around the corner as well. So we've got a lot to get to, Marty. But I want to talk about what is happening in Buffalo. Now, Patrick Kaleta, scratched from the game, goes off not happy. Actually, well, he says he's pissed off that he was scratched. Ryan Miller, after the game, says Patrick Kaleta needs to grow up. This is after Ryan Miller also took some shots at the referees. And you know what? Buffalo used to be kind of the cozy little team that, you almost wanted to succeed because they had a good core group of guys. They had Lindy, they had Miller. There was always this kind of underachieving aspect to them. All of a sudden, they get an owner with money. And, I mean, Marty, they're a train wreck. If they were in a bigger media market, I mean, it would be a soap opera.
You know, for years, the great thing about Buffalo was they were so consistent. Lindy Ruff, the message from Darcy, their general manager, was so consistent throughout that locker room on how they played, who they were. They had an identity. Then they went out and they signed Ville Leino. They signed Christian Ehrhoff to the big contract. They brought some guys into that locker room. And I'm getting the sense, and I'm hearing it from different people, that there was some jealousy in that locker room, that there were some guys that, you know, felt like, what are these guys doing making all the money? We've been here toiling and having some success, you know, doing a decent job for years there in Buffalo. And it just seemed to disrupt everything. Mm. Nothing seems to be settled there. I get that as a team, that it seems to be a lot of individuals or a lot of little separations in the locker room. They don't seem like they're a close-knit unit right now. I think after the season, well, I really expect that to be a team to be very active come deadline in moving some of their veterans and moving some guys that might be unhappy. I like some of their young guys. When you start to look at Hodgson, you look at Vanek. These guys are still young. Stafford's still young. Ennis is young. They've got some guys that they can still build on. But I think that the owner needs to sit down and say, guys, we need to get a very good coach in here. Whether this guy is the guy or not, I don't know. If the general manager is going to stay, he's going to be our guy, and we need to get an identity again, and we need to know who we are, because they've lost that. And I think that, you know, maybe a guy like Pominville moves at the deadline.
Do you see Ryan Miller moving at the deadline? Or is that one of those deals you have to make in the offseason, you know, because it's just so all-encompassing?
Yeah, I do see him moving. And because there would be tremendous value. If you're going to move a guy like Ryan Miller, it's before the deadline. And you have to think of Chicago is out there watching. Mm. You know, you have, and that's where you'll get the most, when you have an owner who has the potential of winning a Stanley Cup but might be a goalie short of it. You know, when you get a guy who can win you a game in a series, and that's what Chicago did not have last year. Maybe they've got it this year, I don't know. But Ryan Miller has tremendous value at the trade deadline, and you said it earlier, he may need a change of scenery. I'm not sure if his teammates are endeared to Ryan Miller right now.
But, you know, the thing with Chicago would appear to have depth to make that deal, but I mean, clearly Chicago gives you a first round draft pick. If you're the Sabres, that's a first round draft pick for the Blackhawks, could be the last pick of the first round. I don't know if you really want that. I don't know if Chicago has enough depth to pull that deal off. But, you know, the reason I find it interesting you mentioned Chicago, because we were talking when the Blackhawks were on that streak, and you made the point then, and you made it again off the air as well, that, you know, streak is great, but happening the way it happened and when it happened, sometimes it disguises some of your weaknesses, doesn't it?
Well, what you do is you don't want to make changes. And
exactly.
So you get a streak like that, you kind of get a little bit drunk on your own success, and you overlook the weaknesses that you have. And, you know, when they start to play a really good hockey team every night come playoff time, and you play against a really good team in a 7-game series, your weaknesses are coming to the forefront. They will be exposed. And if that goal to Crawford was awful in the playoffs, they outshot Phoenix by an average of 15 shots a game. There was an overtime goal from behind the goal line. There was a breakaway that just dribbled in through his legs and he never touched. That killed the Chicago Blackhawks last year. May have lost them the opportunity to win a Stanley Cup. And Ray Emery's emerged a little bit this year to be better, to be healthier. That was a question in Ray Emery, whether he could get healthy again after a hip injury. So, you know, Chicago is a really – I love them. I love to watch them play. I think Keane could be the most entertaining player in the National Hockey League. Their defense, everything about them I really love. I hold my breath in that. And last year, their assistant general manager, we're fine.
Right.
Goaltender, we like him. Then you hear after the season they'd been looking for a goalie the whole year.
Yeah, it's an interesting team because – and we had Eddie Olczyk on, and he covers them a lot. And he made the same point. You watch this team – and you go, oh, this is great. They're on a roll. I mean, they're playing well. Kane, Taves. But you there's that kind of that question mark hanging over them. You wonder, in a 7-game series, you might be able to wear them down a bit. If you've got a shutdown center, you might be able to shut down that first line. They really, to me, both they and the Pittsburgh Penguins, who are on a streak of their own, those are two really good teams who need to make an addition at the deadline, don't they?
Pittsburgh worries me more than the Chicago Blackhawks because Pittsburgh has a penchant for playing 6-5 hockey games.
Right.
And you don't win playoff series that way. Teams will find a way to beat you. A few years ago, Montreal just stood in front of the net and blocked everything and frustrated Pittsburgh and ended up winning 3-1 hockey games and beating the Pittsburgh Penguins out, which shocked everybody. You will lose playing that way. And Chris Letang, the way that he plays, him being out right now may be a good thing for the Pittsburgh Penguins because they may have to play a better defensive style, rely on defensive defensemen, you know, keeping the puck out of your net, making some simple plays when you need to, not always the flashy play. And Pittsburgh really worries me. I, you know, the Washington Capitals for years, the last few years, they could always score goals. I never ever thought they were going to get anywhere near the Stanley Cup Finals because of how they played.
One of the guys out in your neck of the woods that seems to be getting a lot of attention, Ryan Clough, he could help a lot of teams, couldn't he?
He really could. You know what I think he needs? I think he needs somebody to really kick him.
Really?
Ryan Clough, the years that San Jose would get pushed out of the playoffs, you know, they would. Doug Wilson has created a very comfortable environment there, and Ryan Clough is a talented player who is physical and tough, kind of, but needs to kind of get a little pushed into it. If he had a guy like Teddy Green or whatever behind him, oh gosh, he is such. He would be so good. And in the East, at his size with his puck handling ability, I think he'd be even better because I think the East is a little slower than the West.
Right, and playing in the East, that might even elevate his physical game just. Because the guys you're matched up against on a nightly basis. You go into Boston, if you're Ryan Clough, you're going to be tough.
If he goes into New York where Torts will stay on him and get on him,
right.
And they'll demand that he is good every night, I just think that he really, really has an upside that has not been exposed because I think he's in a bit of a comfort zone. San Jose has gotten very comfortable. They lose easy, I think, with you know Joe Thornton, Patrick Marleau there. I'm just not sure if they've challenged themselves, and Doug Wilson has definitely not challenged them.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, general manager under the gun right now, it's got to be Doug Wilson, doesn't it?
But, you know, they don't see him. He's not around there much. He doesn't travel with them. You know, and he's strange. They call him the senator. He's so almost political. It's funny. You know, and that's who Doug is. That's what he is. And the team kind of reflects his personality. And I don't see him change. I really like their coach. Mm-hmm. I think he's tried to change the culture a little bit. But I just think it's so ingrained there in the personnel that they bring in. So Ryan Clough, I think, is a phenomenal name for somebody to go out and get.
And what would, if you were San Jose, I mean, what would they be looking for? Do they need younger players or edgier players?
Wow. I mean, they need a different mindset. Trading Ryan Clough is not necessarily the answer for them because Ryan Clough is a guy that they're
going to... He could be the answer for them, right?
Yeah, he could be. He could be just as valuable for them as he is for anybody else. It's funny. They need edge. Like guys like Steve Ott and guys like that is what I think San Jose really needs.
Joined by Martin McSorley on the Jeff Blair Show. One guy that, you know, we talk about Paul McLean, we talk about the Ottawa Senators, and we've spent most of the season marveling about how the Senators have been able to overcome injuries to Spezza and then Carlson, the goaltending. And, yeah, I don't know if it's almost, Marty, you look at the Senators and you're so used to them being resilient that maybe we lose track of just how good a job Paul McLean has done. The way they don't play like a team missing their three best players. Now, I'm not saying they win games, but they don't play like a team missing their three best players.
You know, you'll hear some people say, oh, the coaches take too much credit or the coaches do this. But when you see a job done like what Paul McLean has done, last year I think I picked them to finish 14th in the East. I really expected that to be a bit of a train wreck last year.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, he just exuded so much confidence. He let those guys play offense, but with some responsibility. He let them have fun with the game. Daniel Alfredson says that he is such a phenomenal communicator. He communicates to the guys. They come to the rink and they're happy. You know, these guys, they go out in a game and they compete for him. And, you know, I think he challenges them, but he does it respectfully. You know, and, you know, you don't hear Kyle Turris steps into the number one centerman. You don't hear a coach saying, oh, you know, well, we need help at center or we, you know, our number one center is out. He believed in the kid. His numbers weren't great, but he keeps putting them out there. The kid is now starting to produce, got an overtime goal the other night.
Zach Smith is another guy.
Right. And Daniel Alfredson is helping the kid out. Daniel Alfredson's having a phenomenal year. He looks like he's having fun doing it. And like you said, you lose Craig Anderson, your number one goaltender. You lose Jason Spezza, and then you lose Carlson on the blue line, and you don't hear them complaining. They're just playing with the 20 guys. They're going out and they're competing. He believes in them. They're almost all overperforming for this guy. This guy has just done such a phenomenal job last year and this year that I think players around the league will say, I'll go play for him.
I know that you saw the Leafs and the Jets. What do you make of – well, I want to ask you the same question. A lot of people are talking about the shootout. not using Mikhail Grabowski. What did you make of that?
Well, I made out that that's what, $5.5 million sitting there that you kind of go, whoops.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's maybe, you know, Rand. That's Randy's team.
Mm-hmm.
Randy's a good coach, and I, you know,
that's why I ask, because you know Randy very.
Yeah, if he taps somebody else on the shoulder, you know, trust me, everybody on that bench looks back and says, "Pick me." You mm-hmm. better hope that they say, "Pick me." And when Randy says, "Hey, listen, you get out there," if you start to throw the guys out there that maybe during the course of the game doesn't perform, doesn't turn it on, you know, you're sending the wrong message to your team. Although you want the points. I mean, Randy's looking for this to be a constant, consistent build. These guys are being patient with this hockey team, as they should be. They're trying to build. They're trying to build the fact that if you do the right things, you're going to play and you're going to be rewarded. Colton Orr got more ice time because he earned it, you know? So I think that Randy, this is a continuous message from Randy saying, if you play like we need you to do, we'll rely on you and we'll give you the ice time.
Can Mikhail Grabowski play for him?
Probably not. No. You know, when you look at John Michael Lyles under Ron Wilson, Wilson loved him, played him, and Randy Carlisle looked at John Michael Lyles, and that's not his style of player. I mean, it's pretty evident from how much John Michael Lyles is playing and how
Boy,
he's being used.
That's a big nut, though. That's what, 4 years, 3 years left at $5.5 million a year?
Yeah, but you know, the Leafs, they went in the draft last year and drafted a really good player. This is a slow, patient build, and I know people around here don't want to hear it, and we say, okay, this year we need to know. You need to just get better. And you can't afford to trade away draft picks anymore. You can't afford to trade away young players. You have to be a patient and slow build and develop the guys who are on the ice and develop the guys in your minor system, reward the guys that are playing hard, create a culture, which they are working hard and they're competing every night. They really are. They're competing. They got back in the hockey game. And Randy, you could see how he used Colton Orr to kind of
right.
show the guys on the bench, I'm going to play who wants to play for me and who was going to play hard. And I think he's done a phenomenal job. And it's going to take some patience. There's going to be some people really disappointed. They're going to complain about certain games. But it's a slow build. And before long, you're going to have free agents. They're going to want to come here, want to play, because this team is slowly getting better.
You know, you played with Randy, and I'm really interested in, is he the type of guy, could Mikhail Grabowski change Randy's opinion of him? Is there something he could do? Or is Randy the type of guy, you know, when he's, you're in the doghouse, you're in the doghouse. That's it. There's no getting out. Or will he change his mind?
No, you know what? But he's going to – he'd have to change who he is.
Right.
You know, he's going to have to go out and do things on the ice that probably are not in his repertoire, not in his mindset. And that's – it. Randy Carlisle's a smart guy. Randy Carlisle, if you think of it, he was not a very good skater, Norris mm-hmm. Trophy winner. I mean, he was such a phenomenal player. I think at one time was the only guy in the NHL that played on two separate teams to score 100 power play goals, and he was the guy on the blue line. You know, so Randy Carlisle, I really like Randy Carlisle. I think he's really smart, but you have to play hard for him mm-hmm. and you have to compete for him, and you're going to have to challenge other guys on that bench for ice time. And that's what Randy wants. And Mikhail Grabowski's not done that. And he's got to be capable of that. But if he goes out there and starts doing it, Randy will reward him for it.
Marty, I appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much, as always.
Jeff, thanks for having me.
Ken Pomeroy is, he is called college basketball's version of Bill James. His website is kenpom.com. He's going to join us. We're going to talk about the NCAA tournament, maybe get some tips as you sit down and fill out your bracket. Ken Pomeroy next as the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. He doesn't always play nice. And that's what gets you the information you need. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hockey Central at noon is right around the corner. It'll be Millard, Kiprios, and McLean. They will ask the question, is Leafs Nation ready to hit the panic button? Of course it is. It's a day that ends in Y. It's never too early to panic. So, TIS NCAA tournament time. And... Everybody's got their bracket. And kind of an odd year, I think. There's been the usual sort of turnover at the top, the number one ranking. But more than anything, it seems as if a lot of the number one seeds, or I shouldn't say a lot, but some of the number one seeds, even some of the number two seeds, there seems to be almost a sense that there's not really, that there's going to be a lot of flux in the tournament. I don't think we're going to see a lot of 16 beating ones or 15 beating twos or anything like that. But I know in a couple of brackets, at least, a lot of people think that things are going to be wide open. Ken Pomeroy joins us. KenPom.com is his website. It's a cool website. You want to take a look at the website before you do your brackets. Got some interesting information, got some interesting numbers, and kind of a little bit of a unique take on the NCAA tournament and NCAA men's basketball. Ken Pomeroy joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Ken, thanks so much for doing this.
Jeff, thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
As I look at the bracket, I used to have this thing when I filled out brackets where I always focused on teams that shot free throws, could win on the road. And I mean, obviously it helps if a team's on a bit of a streak, but before we get into, you know, who's overrated, who's underrated, let me just ask you this. Generally, is there a framework for determining what low seed is a good candidate to pull off an upset? Is there something you look at that says, you know what, this 13 team is capable of doing this?
Well, I end up usually giving a boring answer for this. I mean, they really just need to be, you know, a very good team. I mean, whether they get there by being really experienced or whether they get there by, you know, as you say, shooting good free throws, you know, shooting a good free throw percentage or anything like that, you know, winning on the road. I mean, most teams that are in this tournament as a 13 seed or a 14 seed, they've won in a smaller conference, so they rack up a lot of wins. They can win on the road. You know, the question is, are they getting those wins, you know, at the last second, or are they getting those wins by bigger margins? I mean, that's kind of the key, I think, for me. If they're winning a lot of games big, that's a pretty good sign that they're capable of playing with the big boys.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only, like, specific thing that I would look at for a deeper run is a team that's capable of rebounding the ball well. You know, especially if they're a good offensive rebounding team, that indicates they have some pretty good athletes, and that's a skill that they can take against opponents from bigger conferences, have bigger players, better athletes. That's going to serve those upset-minded teams pretty well.
With Ken Pomeroy and the Jeff Blair Show, do you like teams that have that go-to guy? Is that a big edge in the tournament, having that one guy, or can a quote-unquote well-balanced team be just as successful?
Yeah, you know, I actually prefer the well-balanced team. You know, neither one really eliminates you, but I think if you look historically at, you know, the so-called superstar carrying a team, I mean, this doesn't happen that often. You can, you know, look at Carmelo Anthony, I suppose, at Syracuse. I mean, that was 10 years ago. You know, people talk about Danny Manning. That was 1988. For the most part, teams that succeed have, you know, at least two dependable options offensively, and some of them, you know, are pretty well spread out among their starting five. So I'm more, at least on the offensive side, I'm more focused on team balance. Maybe defensively, you know, having a guy last year like Anthony Davis, who's just a dominant shot blocker and you know, is a focal point of a defense, that probably helps. But offensively, I think balance is better.
With Ken Pomeroy of the Jeff Blair Show, what team stands out to you as being an overrated team, a highly ranked team that could very well be a casualty in the second round? Or first, for that matter, if there is one.
Yeah, you know, the problem with the first round this year is that the 15 and 16 seeds are really weak, and they're always weak, so it's not a surprise that they're particularly weak this year, so I wouldn't get too caught up in picking upsets on that level. Probably the biggest first-round upset you might expect is a game between Marquette and Davidson. Marquette's a 3-seed, Davidson's a 14. That should be really competitive, a really competitive game. You know, could come down to the last few minutes. Davidson's very experienced. As far as higher seeds that might go down early, I'm not too high on Miami. You know, they were a team that been ranked in the top five for portions of the season, and people considered them to be the top team at one point. And they played well, and it's not like there's necessarily one thing that jumps out at you that you know, indicates that they would lose. But you know, I've been rated 14th in my system, and they're a two seed, so so a team that's probably overrated to some extent. You know, Kansas is another team of the one seed. I think getting a little bit too much hype. I mean, they've won a lot of games, won the Big 12, but you know, they have a pretty big loss to Baylor, you know, pretty recently, you know, at the end of the regular season. Lost to a really bad TCU team earlier in the season. Again, another good team that, that could go far, but if I was, you know, going to pick a top seed to slip up early, I think, you know, the Jayhawks would be my pick.
And, you know, if you look at their path in, I mean, if they beat, and they should beat Western Kentucky, they get the winner of North Carolina and Villanova. You know, and they may end up with having to face either VCU or Michigan if they get through there. That's a particularly interesting bracket. I mean, VCU is one of those teams that maybe it's because I happen to see them for odd reasons on TV a couple of times in the past month, just where I was and what I was watching. They're kind of an intriguing team, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously Kansas and VCU already have some tournament history 2 years ago. They played in the Elite Eight, and VCU ended up beating them and going to the Final Four. But this year's VCU team is probably better than that year's VCU team, and they rely on an amazingly aggressive defense that forces turnovers like no other team in the country. And, you know, Kansas is a team that doesn't necessarily have a reliable point guard. I mean, that's been a question this year. Elijah Johnson has been particularly turnover prone. In the cases when Nadir Tharp runs the offense, it's kind of similar. So that's a matchup that could play into VCU's hands a little bit. It would be, you know, really a fun game if it came to that.
Yeah. Is there, of the number one seeds of Louisville, Gonzaga, Indiana, Kansas, which are you most comfortable in saying has the best shot of winning?
Yeah, it's pretty close between Louisville and Indiana. I mean, I've liked those two teams all year. And, you know, maybe the last month or so, I really kind of thought those were the best teams in the country. If I had to, you know, hitch my wagon to one of those teams, I'd go with Louisville. I think their path is slightly easier getting out of the Midwest region. The two seed there is Duke. The three seed is Michigan State. And you know, they're both good teams. But I think I'd go with Louisville. They're playing a little bit better basketball lately as well, coming off the championship in the Big East tournament. So I'd go with the Cardinals, but Indiana's very good as well. I mean, you know, if I was filling out a bracket, I'd probably have both those teams in the final, assuming, you know, at least one would end up making it there.
Do you fill out a bracket?
I don't, Jeff. It's a no-win proposition for me. Because,
that's what I was wondering.
Yeah. I mean, I do offer advice to, you know, close relatives and family members, but, yeah, I don't fill out a bracket myself.
Oh, it's still a fun watching it, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, honestly, when you don't fill out a bracket, it makes it even more fun because you're sort of free to switch allegiances at any moment, and that makes it a little bit easier.
The website is kenpom.com, KENPOM.com. Ken Pomeroy joins us on the Jeff Blair Show, a team that, I mean, in Canada, we tend to focus a little bit on teams that have Canadians on it. One of the teams that we're kind of watching is Gonzaga. What do you make of that? I mean, that whole region just seems to me to be up in the air. And what do you make of Gonzaga's chances?
Yeah, I mean, good call there. That's, you know, so I like Gonzaga, and I would probably pick them to get out of that region. But as you said, it's a little bit of a minefield. If you, you know, if you want to pick a lower seed to come out of a region, that's probably the reason to do it. Gonzaga has a problem where it looks like they're going to play Pitt in the second round. And I have Pitt ranked seventh overall in my system, and they're an eighth seed. So, that's a bit of a bad break for the Zags. You know, you also have Wisconsin as a potential Sweet 16 matchup. You know, a five seed that I have ranked ninth overall. So just a bad draw and a surprisingly bad draw. I really thought, you know, they were going to get placed out west and they kind of have this easier draw to get out of there. Didn't work out that way. You know, just to get the Elite Eight is going to be a pretty big accomplishment for them. And they're a great team and they're worthy of a one seed. You know, I've been ranked fourth overall, so they're no fluke. You know, they have front court depth like you wouldn't believe, you know, like, you know, so many teams in this tournament would be envious of. So, you know, they're a legitimately good team. they've just been kind of presented with a pretty big challenge against the Final Four.
I mean, I always like looking at 12-5. The 12 seeds in this tournament are Akron, California, Oregon, and Ole Miss. Is there any one of those teams you like?
I particularly like Akron. I think they're kind of an interesting team. Yeah, they are playing VCU, which we just talked about. And I think, you know, especially in people picking brackets, VCU is going to be very, very popular. Not too many people are going to pick that upset. Akron actually lost its starting point guard a couple weeks ago to some legal issues. So they're a team that doesn't have a very high value right now. But they did win their conference tournament without their starting point guard, and granted, it only took them two games to do it. But the issue of losing Alex Abreu might not be that big a deal for them, and that game should be pretty competitive. If they're able, you know, the key against VCU, again, is just if you're able to take care of the basketball, you have a shot. If you don't, you're going to lose by 20. But if you do, you have a shot to beat them. And so that would be a game I would look at pretty closely.
Ken, I appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much. It was good fun.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Jeff. Appreciate
Take
it.
Take care. That is Ken Pomeroy. The website is kenpom.com, KENPOM.com. That's interesting. He's got his, you get the ranked teams and you get his breakdown of the ranked teams. And there's some interesting blog and some factors you want to see, four factors. It's kind of a cool website, kind of a cool way of breaking down the NCAA tournament. And if you're filling out a bracket, it may be one of those things, maybe one of those added little weapons you can have as you sit there and try to beat your buddies. And again, we appreciate Ken Pomeroy joining us. The website, kenpom.com, KENPOM. That is it for me. Hockey Central at noon is next. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll be talking about the Miami Heat one way or another. The Heat going for their 23rd consecutive win tonight in Boston against the Boston Celtics. Jays have the day off. They'll be back in action tomorrow against Houston. And the Leafs also have the day off. They are back on Wednesday against Steve Stamkos and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Then they got Buffalo on the road. Then they got Boston in a home-and-home. So this five-game losing streak, it needs to be broken very quickly before those home-and-home games with the Bruins. Hockey Central at noon is next. This has been the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.